Welcome back to another episode of the Young Indiana Jones Retrospective by Via VHS. As always, I'm Wesley with my co-host Spencer Scott Holmes. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. Looking forward. We're getting to the split part of Young Indiana Jones, where we go from season one to season two in these episodes.
So if I would have known that episodes five and six, really like six picks up right where five left off, if I would have known that, I would have paired those two together. Mm-hmm. But you know, you live, you learn. And you know, the unfortunate thing is we could only do this one. We could do this again, but why would we?
That'd be silly.
So yeah. So if you do your own Young Indiana Jones retrospective, you want to double up on the episodes, I would recommend doing five and six together, because six also ends the first season, and then we go episode seven goes into season two. So had I paid attention, I would have known. But there was no way for us to know that this one picks up right where episode five leaves off.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to say this. Like, I didn't even know that the seasons jumped into it till I looked it up later on. And I was like, oh, hey, that was right where it switched off. Like, it's not like six to seven was like tune in next time, you know, on Young Indiana Jones season two. You know, it didn't have any of that stuff in there. So, but.
Yeah. I mean, at least it was in season two. Thank goodness.
Yeah, exactly. You know, my, you know, once again, my favorite part still at the end of the day is I can't wait to see in each one of these episodes what old man Indiana Jones is going to do to somebody else's free time next, because that's my favorite part about it. As I just love the people he stops and then talks to them for 45 minutes. Because let's be honest, however long we're watching it at home, that's how long he's talking to that poor bastard. And in that process, I just picture them having to stand there. You know what I mean? You know when you get caught in one of those talk traps and it's a nice enough person that you just don't really know how to jump ship on them? You know, I mean, I know I get stuck in those kind of things. And I'm not that kind of – there's some people out there that are really good. Like, they can just, like, literally just, like, bout face and just walk away, say nothing, just look like a total ass. You know, that's not me, you know. I feel like I'm one of these people that in the Young Indiana Jones one, I would get caught in the 45-minute long chat with him.
Old man, you know, especially a war veteran. Yeah, I'm stuck. I can't.
Yeah.
Now, like, I'm really good at, like, if I'm at, like, Best Buy is the worst, or Bass Pro Shops, or just anywhere, or a kiosk at a mall, and people are like, hey, you want to try? I'm like, no, leave me alone.
Oh, well, that's if they're trying to sell you something, and then you realize that they're you know, that's different.
I can get out of conversations pretty easy if I really want to, but you know, we're both nice guys, I think, so it's kind of difficult. But what happens in episode seven, we'll get to it in a minute, but the seven is by far the most awkward one yet, with the mail lady. That was just like,
yeah, so, yeah, we'll get there when the time does, but we'll get there.
We have a lot to say about that one. But so real quick, if you're just catching up with us, just to kind of lay the groundwork again, I'll probably do this every episode. We're doing the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, not the Adventures of Young Indiana Jones. The Young Indiana Jones Chronicles aired on ABC back in the day. It was episodic. There was 45-minute long episodes, the bulk of them, with some feature-length stuff mixed in. And then towards the tail end, as the series was kind of tapering off into oblivion, they threw in some other movies in there trying to keep things going. But mostly 45-minute long episodes. And then, of course, later George Lucas re-edited them all in the movies. And so we're doing the original stuff. And I bring this up also because I was able to correspond, mentioned episode one. I'm like, I'd really like to talk to the person that put all this together, because we're using a YouTube channel called Young Indie Restored. And it's the original series from the 90s. And you can't find that anywhere. All you could find is the movies, like the re-edited movies. We've mentioned before, we've had our issues with that when you're trying to review. There's like, it's kind of like disjointed a little bit, mainly because old indie's not there. And they kind of lead you into things as a segue. So we're doing Young Indie Restored on YouTube is the place where we're basing this retrospective on. And I did talk to the person. Oh gosh, I forgot his name, but he lives in Norway. And he may at some time be on the podcast. We'll have to figure out. I mean, obviously, there's a huge time difference.
Yeah, the time one's going to be the fun one to figure that one out, because he's got to be in Norway. He's got to be, he's probably 9 hours. Well, for me. So that means he's 6 hours from you.
Yeah. His name's Mats. I might be pronouncing this wrong, but Mats Brana. Mats Brana. And I told him I'd give him a shout out on the episode. Super nice. Very awesome person to correspond with. But I really want to know from him just kind of what, you know, why he did this, how big of an indie fan he is, and then also where he got all this, where he got the episodes. So obviously, it's something called Stew TV. If you watch Young Indie Restored, there's a watermark on the bottom, and it says Stew TV, S-T-O-O TV. Mm-hmm. So it might be some Norwegian, like, you know, USA network or something.
Yeah, like, so you want one of those ones.
Yeah.
Because that's totally where it is. It's like, you know, but it's just so nice to be able to have these put together, which it's always that weird thing, too, when you think of stuff as big as an Indiana Jones franchise, that like the original versions of these ones are literally lost. Because like not even the VHS copies, I think, even have any of that old Indiana Jones stuff. Like, you had to see it off TV to find the old Indy and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, as I said, they changed them pretty quickly. Like, literally by like the late 90s, they were already changing them. Yeah, well,
this right here, this is one of the VHS copies, and it is The Adventures of Young Indiana Jones. This is a movie. It's the Treasure of the Peacock's Eye. And so they're already edited in the films. Let me see if I can see what, of course, the part of the thing that would have the year is ripped off on the back, like right there. Of course.
Yeah, right there.
But
gosh, if I looked hard enough, I have that same video behind me somewhere, but it's one of those ones that, it's like that. That was it. Then I think that was the first time those ones were released where you could buy them at home. Because I remember when those sets would come out.
Yeah, it's broken off here from that tear that I was just showing you, but it has at the very bottom. It has www.indianajones. You know, tear at. I'm assuming it's at paramount.com.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can go there. So late, anytime there's a .com. We're looking probably late 90s at the earliest, I would assume.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously internet became big in like 95, but it wasn't until like the late 90s when everybody started doing .com everything, putting that on everything.
You know what I mean? You had to have your website on there. Well, plus I think that re-release of the Indiana Jones trilogy came out right after the same time that they did the re-release of Star Wars. So like 97 or whatever, mm-hmm. and they do that Star Wars re-release. Or whatever it is. I think Indiana Jones, it was like 98 it came out. Because I remember it feeling like it was not that much farther afterwards. And in that, when they re-released it, that was when they started putting the Young Indiana Jones VHSs, you know, that one that would come with that like one sense. Or two. And mm-hmm. then you could also buy like it felt like it was like a half set of like VHSs though. Because I remember it being like 12 VHSs, but I don't think it was all the movies. It's like that, they didn't put them all out until the DVD. But then once again, it's still the different variations of it.
Yeah. It's interesting how this all worked out. This one has, I need to watch it because it has some bonus interviews in here. And so maybe when we get to the episodes that contain this.
Yeah, because I have that VHS as well too. So.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, this is the one I was thinking was red, because on one side it is red and the other side it's yellow. That's why I was
thinking. Yeah, because one's red, one's yellow. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll get into that. But basically, yeah, Young Indie Restored on YouTube. Go there. If you want to follow along with us, that's what we're using. That's the original, you know, content, the context of this show. And like I said before, it's not the best quality, but, you know, sacrifices have to be made to get, you know, the original stuff. So I'm having fun with it.
Yeah, and, you know, and once it kicks on to the main part of the episode, it definitely boosts up, and you know, it's a decent enough version. Like, there was a previous version of YouTube we watched a long time ago where it was like the 320 or 240p like almost video files, and it was just like, okay, this looks like when you've copied a VHS tape too many times, you know, and then you put it up on the internet.
Yeah.
Whereas like this one, like it will start, it looks, when it does like get to certain points, it does at least look pretty decent enough. It's, you know, it's, you know, we're not getting like, I guess, the Blu-ray copies, which who knows whatever that will ever happen, but
yeah, at least definitely not of the, you know, young
original version. But
again, and I think before I said already too, I just have a sneaking suspicion that whatever Disney's plans are for this franchise post Indiana Jones, like, you know, Indy 5, mm-hmm. You see what they're doing with Star Wars. They're going all to television, you know?
Yeah.
There, any movie that they've hypothesized to bring out in the near future has been pretty much, you know, the Patty Jenkins movie, I think, is dead. The Taika Waititi movie, I think, is dead. I know that Rian Johnson movie is dead, you know?
Yeah. Well, she's even, Rian Johnson's last movie went straight to TV. So
yeah. Yeah, well, that was good though. I mean, that makes sense. But it's yeah. So I think everything Star Wars is going to be TV. So I have a feeling Indiana Jones is going to be TV, and I have a feeling they're going to borrow a lot from the series or just remake it. You know, they'll Disney-fy it.
Yeah,
a little bit. Who knows what that's going to entail?
Yeah, exactly. The upside is that, you know, in this, at least in this young Indiana Jones, you're getting a lot of George in this one. He writes them and he edits all these episodes. So I think that part's just pretty sweet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely, and that makes a difference in my opinion. Like when you got George at the helm, I feel like when it comes to Star Wars or Indiana Jones, if George isn't there, it's almost like it has an uncanny feel. Like somebody else is writing fan fiction. Because let's be honest, all the Disney Star Wars movies, you know, they're, you know, good in different ways and so on, but they are at the end of the day just really expensive fan fiction. They're not real movies. They're just giant fan fiction. Like, you know what I mean? It's just, if you had that huge budget, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. The only real movie could come from George, in my opinion.
Last thing we'll say about that before we get into the episodes, I will say though that Indy 5, because it's been in development for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And because Spielberg was originally going to direct it, and it kept getting pushed back, because they announced Indy 5 before Force Awakens even came out. Not before Force Awakens was announced, but before it came out, they had already said Indy 5 is going to happen. I mean, we're looking at like 8 years ago now. So, so finally they're getting this done. And it's been in development for so long, and I think that there's going to be enough Lucas Spielberg in it.
Yeah.
That it won't feel that way. And I feel like Lucas and Spielberg probably, well, maybe not Lucas, but Spielberg definitely, I think, chose Mangold for it.
Yeah. Hopefully, that's what I kind of hope, is I hope that one feels, you know, the way it needs to be, you know.
We should do the, as part of this, we should do that one never happened Indiana Jones 4 script that never.
Yeah, I'm always down for reading scripts and doing the unproduced thing, you know, because it's always, that's one of the funnest things, is you find those scripts and then you kind of see the what if versions of different stories. Mm-hmm. And I mean, on Old Man Orange, we've done that for, kind of have like a spinoff segment that always had that, where we've probably done like 8 or 9 scripts. And every single time, it's always like you find some really cool stuff in there, or you see some stories that are just like, man, this is awesome. You know, things like the George A. Romero Resident Evil one, or the original Super Mario Brothers movie script. I mean, and a couple of the other like Justice League ones that never came out. There's all kinds of cool stuff out there.
Well, we'll have to get to it. I mean, I've read some of that one before, and it was pretty interesting what they were doing with it. But I had some like ghost elements, if I remember correctly. But anyway. So episode 6, we're doing episode 6 and 7 in this episode. As I said before, episode 6 picks up right where episode 5 leaves off, and it's also the end of the season. So we should, honestly, we maybe should have done 4, 5, and 6 if I would have known.
Yeah, but you would have never known except for in hindsight.
Yeah, so hindsight's 20/20, but it's still going to be a great, you know, it was still a great watch. But we took like a, just for context, we took like a month-long break in watching this. So we probably wouldn't have done that either, if we didn't know. But yeah, Congo, January 1917, being treated for a bee sting to his toe. Old Man Indy recounts the time he spent in Albert Schweitzer's jungle hospital in Africa during the Great War. Yeah, we'll just leave it there. I'm not going to read the whole thing. This one was directed by Simon Winsor again. Writers Frank Darabont and George Lucas. I did see Carrie Fisher writes one of these episodes.
Does she?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I am excited about that. But yeah, so this was originally aired on April 8th, 1992. It's also, this is the end of the first season because I think the next one is in 1993. So we're jumping ahead quite a bit in this, filmed in Nairobi, Kenya. So, this was a good episode. It to backtrack a little bit. So episode 5, and it's been like a month since we watched it, but you could watch the previous episode when it's more fresh in our minds.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, where they're going through, you know, they have to deliver these guns and they're with a group of people and they found a kid at this village and that, you know, the main, like the head guy doesn't want them to keep it. And they do anyway. And there's just like a lot of back and forth between young Indy and his superior there. And all this bad stuff goes on. It takes them forever to get through the jungle. And they finally get to this stopping point where they're going to, you know, deliver the guns essentially. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where the episode ends. And it's a really, really good episode, episode 5. And 6 picks up. I was so disappointed when the episode opens, Andy's still in the hospital. I'm like, oh shit.
Well, yeah, this one too, it has like the very, like, it has that total early 90s thing that you see in a lot of like movies where it's like, hey man, there's that gang warfare violence on the street that the kids are into, you know, like I always think of like Lethal Weapon 3 is my go-to movie when I think of that stuff more than anything else, you know?
Yeah.
and all that kind of stuff. And it literally has one of those scenes too, where like Indy's like, I just can't believe the kids these days are blasting each other in the streets. Hey doctor, I know you got to perform surgery on this little girl, but let me tell you this 45 minute story about when I was in Africa.
I love how everybody in the 90s just has time to stop and listen to a story, you know?
Well, yeah, there's some little girl that's supposed to be in the other operating room who just got, you know, hit by like a drive-by shooting or something like that and bleeding out and wait for this doctor to show up. And Indy's like, oh, wait a second, it goes on a little bit longer. So we were taking the guns and boy, you know, I was sick as a dog, let me tell you.
So, yeah, so episode 5, Indy, so these old Indy things are so bad they're good.
Yeah, that's exactly what they are. Because I almost look more forward. They're not the best part of the thing in a sense, but they're almost the thing. I look so much more forward to like the old Indians seeing how they get turns out.
How are they going to turn this out? How is the story going to not relate to the opening scene at all? So they use always old Indy as a segue to win the story. So in episode 5, old Indy's in the hospital. It doesn't tell you why there. In that episode, you don't really find out till episode 6 why he was there in the first place, but he's there waiting for something. And this little girl gets wheeled on a stretcher and he's like, I hope she lives. And this guy's like, I don't want her to live because she's black pretty much. He doesn't say that, but that's,
he doesn't say it, but he's like Captain Republican sitting there with like, he's
90s MAGA. Let's just be real. It's like 90s. He's 90s MAGA. And he's like, oh, let me tell you about the time I was with a bunch of really cool black people in Africa. And that's what this is what the episode is. Okay. So yeah. So he was, that's basically how the episode goes. And it tells about him going through the Congo and the river and the people that he met, that like the little boy, it was about basically about the little boy. Like everybody's like, oh, this little boy is not going to be anything. You know, he's going to die and he's going to bring us all down. And then later the boy became Barack Obama. No, it's no.
But no, yeah, he literally becomes president of like, you know, whatever country they were kind of in, right?
Yeah,
there.
So. He what, the boy was important. That was the gist of it. He was like the president of something, and they found him in this village, and they're like, don't leave him here, let him die. And they're like, no, we can't, he's a kid. And so episode 6 opens, he's still at that hospital. And it's like only him there, he's still waiting. And he's just there because he had a bee sting.
Yeah, so it's Indiana Jones. You think he'd be, he wouldn't need to go to a hospital for a bee sting. Let's be honest.
No way George Lucas wrote these.
No well, way. Keep in mind, George is still doing the George Lucas way of writing. I feel is he does like the fun part of making a movie. You sit down and think about the story idea, but then you pass along and have somebody else do the actual work. You know what I mean? Like, because that's kind of how it is. Like, he just gets to sit down, write a couple paragraphs of like everything that's awesome, and then like, okay, you flesh this out for me. See you later.
That's ultimately what I want to do with this podcast. I just wanted to show up for the recording and think of what we're gonna do, and then after that, somebody do all the other things.
Exactly.
Yeah, but
I think the George Lucas way of lifestyle is kind of the key thing. That's how you become the true filmmaker. Is that you do all the good ideas, you know, and you make you come by and tell everybody, and.
Well, there's no way he thought of this. There's just no way, because it's so okay. The old indie stuff is dorky as hell. It's funny because it's just so random. But the guy's not a good. It's like not a good representation of what an old indie would be. First of all, if you see Harrison Ford, like he's grumpy as hell, and you're like, well, how are they supposed to know that? He was grumpy in the 90s. He was grumpy back then, so he's just going to get.
He's
grumpy.
Literally grumpy in American Graffiti.
He's just a grumpy guy. Like, so why they're making this, Mr. Magoo like old man? Like, just it. We're not. We love the show. So let me just get that out. We love this show.
Oh, I love the living daylights out of it.
But indie, and we love the old indie stuff. But it is bad.
Yeah, it's bad, really, but bad. It's amazing.
Yeah. So basically it picks up, this doctor comes out, and like Indy's like, oh, is she gonna live? And he's like, yeah, I think so. It's touch and go. He's got blood all over his smock and all that. And he's like, oh, I got stung by a bee. And he's like, okay, that's really cool. And then he's like, well, let me tell you this story. Where does it, how the fuck does he transition to this? I can't remember.
I just remember them being, they were on the boat, and like in less than like 5 minutes of them being on the boat, like everybody's pretty much like half dead or sick already.
Yeah,
you know, like it's like that. And then Remy's got like some foot disease thing going on. Oh, I guess, no, right before that, because I think, isn't that right before when like Indy's like yelling at Remy, like he's like, you know, if you don't get on that boat with me, I'm gonna court-martial you or something like that.
Yeah,
he goes on this whole tyrant of his power thing, and then about 2 seconds later, he realizes he just yelled at this friend who's about twice his age.
Remy,
Remy, and then I also think Remy, he's been on this war for like the last 3 years, hasn't lost a single pound. In fact, I think he's only gotten bigger being out in Africa. He's going Sally Struthers out here.
He didn't even, malaria didn't even get him, like. He still just like got bigger. Yeah, he's got this whole Andre the Giant vibe, kind of. I can't really explain it, but yeah. So yeah, back up a little bit. End of episode 5, they finally get to where they're going. It's not like the main destination, but they've got the guns on this boat. They go through all this shit to get there. They get there, and this guy that's got this Dr. Evil vibe with this, what was the eye thing?
Oh gosh, yes, that's right. Because I remember America's like, I pops back up in this episode too, and I'm kind of looking at this guy, and it's like, is that supposed to be like, you know, is that they going for kind of one of those 007 looks where you got the guy who's kind of disfigured a little bit and so on like that, or is that just what the actor looks like? Because sometimes I feel like if that's just what the actor looks like, I mean, like, way to go that they got him casted in there and so on. But I feel like I'm staring at him trying to figure out where this is leading to, and it never did.
I think if it was a little clearer, we wasn't watching it, Potato, we would be able to tell, because I thought he had a monocle for a minute.
I thought he did too, but no, he just has like a cave-in on his eye.
Yeah, like it was a war injury kind of thing. And yeah. I can't tell if it's real or if it's like really bad makeup or what's going on. But anyway, Indy wants to continue the mission, and this guy's like, nah, you ain't doing shit. Like, forget about it. You know, I can't remember the exact reason why, but the bureaucracy gets involved. That's basically the idea of this, is that there's a lot of bureaucracy involved in.
Love French. That's
in both of these episodes, it's a big thing. So Indy decides to disobey orders and go through with this himself. He and Remy get into a fight. They end up on the boat, and all the men that they were, you know, that they got to this place and they were all healing and getting better. He throws their ass back on the boat and they get like down the river a little bit and everybody starts just dropping dead.
Like, yeah.
It's clearly the wrong decision to keep going for.
Yeah, exactly. And people there, and Remy's got his foot condition going on and whatnot. And, you know, and then as they're going down, it's almost like it's like at the end, like everybody's sick, no one's there, you know, and so on. And somehow, some way, this, you know, this one kind of German black guy jumps on their boat, and, you know, Indy's just all delirious, and someone has like a scuffle. And then they end up in like a German hospital, like tent area. Mm-hmm. You know, well, kind of almost like a missionary thing, but it's not a missionary thing. It's just a guy from Germany who's like, you know what? I probably want to get out of this war and I'll just go down to Africa and, you know, go help some people out for a few years.
Yeah. Well, it's Albert Schweitzer. He, and it we talked about in the show before, you're always going to have historical figures in, mm-hmm. in the show. And this is a big one, you know, Nobel Peace Prize winner, Albert Schweitzer, amazing polymath, yep. You know, go look it up. But he ends up at his hospital because that's, you know,
just, you know, it's Indy.
Indy's just whimsically enchanted in that sort of way. Very, very Harry Potter like.
He's just that and Forrest Gump.
Yeah. There's a little bit of Harry Potter, a little bit of Forrest Gump. And that's the kind of magic Indy has where he just finds himself on the, you know, doorstep of history with the, you know, especially in the next episode. Just no matter what he does, he's just kind of right there on the pulse of history. And yep. So this one, yeah, they're all dying. It looks hopeless. They're not going to get the guns where they need to go. And Indy finally falls asleep. Guy jumps on the boat and takes them. He feels like hostage because, you know, obviously they're at war with the Germans. Mm-hmm. And when he talks to Schweitzer for a little bit and then he heals everybody up, what this episode really is Schweitzer's big thing was reverence for life was his big, like, pretty much everything he did led to mm-hmm. that was his Nobel idea, you know. And he what this episode's about, really, without going into the whole thing, is Andy, he had some growing moments when he did the Pancho Villa thing, and he went there and was like, oh, I kind of became disenchanted with that. Then he's like, I'm gonna go join the war and, you know, fight for good. And then now he's becoming disenchanted with World War I as well, and another kind of notch in his belt in terms of just progressing that indie character and, mm-hmm. you know, becoming less naive. And I really, really liked this episode a lot. It was not very action packed, but it was, you know, kind of slower, like the Elizabeth Hurley episode where everything's calmed down, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I really think so far of all the ones we watched, if you kind of combine that 5 and 6 together, once we kind of realize that's sort of like the two-parter finale thing, mm-hmm. that right there is probably like the pinnacle so far of the show. It's like these episodes have been just fantastic. They just got, you know, a cool storyline. It starts to get to that point where like things are starting to get serious. There's death on the line. You know what I mean? It's like the adventure's kind of like there's adventure, but now everything can be really like almost like grounded hard here. And just the different storylines of them kind of going through here and just Indy being like stuck in this one. It's like, yeah, he's kind of like stuck in this hospital thing. And he kind of gets this weird kind of delirious point and so on, where he's just not too sure who he's supposed to be trusting anymore.
Yeah. I didn't expect such good character development. Like, I didn't think that they were going to really work around building the character of Indy, because we mentioned before how this Indy's kind of naive. And at first it's, when you're thinking about it, it's kind of not what you want. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, George intentionally cast somebody who can, you know, in Sean Patrick Flannery, that can kind of convey that. And they wanted him to seem kind of nice. He's young. He's still learning things. And I didn't expect it to be so well written in terms of just, you know, it's still kind of cheesy and 90s TV.
Yeah.
But in terms of the idea of where it's going, it lives up to the character.
Like, oh, most definitely.
Good enough to be Indiana Jones, you know?
Yeah. No, I definitely feel you there. As I said, like, it's like once you kind of get, once the show kind of gets going, it's just like, I feel like just these last handful of episodes have all been super good. Like, it's just one of those ones they're dialed in. I'm always interested to see where this goes. You know what I mean? I want to see, like, kind of, because, you know, it's like you kind of get into them and you're like, you know, these can kind of go any which direction now. It's not like it's always going to have a happy ending or something like that, you know? And even in this one, too, it's like, gosh, like, right off the bat, like, some of the platoon he was in when the previous episode, yeah, like, half of them are dead. I think only six of them make it, including Indy and Remy and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's dark. It's a lot of existential stuff, like a lot of deep philosophy stuff that he's kind of introduced to in this. And he starts kind of rethinking the war, and he goes from being like gung-ho, like, we're going to do whatever we got to do to get this, you know, finish this mission. And he kind of changes to, can we just end this shit? Like, it's pointless. Like, all these lives are being lost for what? I mean, World War One's confusing anyway. Like, anybody they're wrong.
No, I don't think it doesn't matter what side you're on. It's like it's all confusing. That's why I think it makes it almost one of the more interesting wars, is because there's so much going on in that whole kind of like universe. And it's one of those ones, just like so many different angles too, and so on, that, you know, they can go through. And this, you know, in the Indiana Jones show, it's kind of cool that like that's actually the main focus of it, is so much World War One stuff, because Indiana Jones being thrown into that is such a good catalyst to kind of take you through that story of all these different places and characters and so on.
I think, so we're doing 6 and 7 this episode. I feel like episode 9, I feel like there's one more really good World War One episode. And I feel like episode 9, it seems like they jumped to like Chicago in the 1920s. So mm-hmm. It feels like it's kind of, we're kind of getting to the tail end of this World War One arc. But
I think World War One starts coming back around though as well. I think it.
Yeah.
Because I almost want to say there's farther ahead, there's other World War One episodes.
You're right. I did see that, and it makes me kind of wonder how we should watch it, because it is kind of interesting how that kind of it does kind of backtrack, and I don't know when Young Indy comes back, honestly.
Yeah, because I think there's only like, according, at least I remember from like the re-edited versions of these, I think there's only like 4 Kid Indy episodes or something like that. So I think we've seen 2 of them at least.
Mm-hmm.
So there's only a few more. I mean, I think we should totally watch it in like the original ABC, like, you know, that order. I think no matter what, however it goes chronologically, I think the ABC order is how it should be dictated.
Well, it's definitely since we've committed to that this far. I mean, you know, but
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the end of season 1. Congo, January 1917. Albert Schweitzer really changes Indy's perspective a lot. Old Indy's at the hospital, still getting treated for a toe. Not a whole lot of other huge names in there. Friedrich von Thun plays Albert Schweitzer. I've seen him in something else. Oh, Schindler's List. He's in Schindler's List. Not a lot of familiar faces in this one, especially not compared to the next one. You know, Ronnie Couture or whatever his name is, who plays Remy, doesn't even have a picture on IMDb.
So this is about probably like the only thing he's done?
Pretty much. I mean, if you go to his, it's like all Young Indy. And then a few other foreign things. It's like the majority of it is Young Indy. So,
yeah.
Which he's not like, he's a bad actor.
Well, like, you know what he is? He's the classic George Lucas comic relief character.
He's Jar Jar, isn't he?
He's Jar Jar. He's C-3PO. That's who he is. Which, gosh, you know, it's like, you know, because George loves those things. And then I finally realized why George loved them so much is like, if you watch that, I watched that Hidden Fortress Akira Kurosawa movie, mm-hmm. which I never saw that before. And I finally watched it. So I'm like, and that one's one of those ones. It's an interesting Akira Kurosawa movie. It's definitely not what I thought it was going to be. And it's one of those movies where the comic relief character, that's just like one of those ones. Like, imagine if Jar Jar was like literally the main character of episode 1. Like, mm-hmm. that's sort of how like that kind of felt. Cause those like comic relief guys, they're there a lot. So I'm like, if this was one of his favorite movies as a kid, I see he just probably got obsessed with the goofy comic relief characters. And that movie just has like the, almost like a proto Jar Jar, like, you know what I mean? Because those characters are almost so goofy that they almost become kind of annoying as that the movie kind of goes on.
Yeah, and he's kind of annoying. And honestly, you could take Remy completely out of the show, and at least at this point, the only reason for him to be there. The only real significant effect he has had on the plot is that he is the reason Indy goes to the Belgian army.
Yeah.
And that's really the only major effect he's had on the plot. Otherwise, you can kind of take him out, and it really actually probably be a little bit smoother, honestly. Now, I don't know where that character is going to go, but as of right now.
You know. Yeah, and he's not... He's really not god awful. He's just kind of weird. I feel like it's just weird. It's just Indy has this friend who looks like he's like twice as old as him, about three times as fat as him. You know what I mean? Like, and I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, they get along. They're great. You know, whatever. But it's just like one of those ones. It's such a strange character to be like, here's this goofy guy. You know,
it's like Jonah Hill's character in Wolf of Wall Street hanging out with Jordan Belfort. That's kind of what it reminds me of a little bit. It's like, well, how are they friends? But they are.
Yeah. Yeah. But, no. As I said, I don't dislike Remy or anything like that, but he is just one of those ones. It is one of those ones. He's just sort of there.
Yeah. Useful idiot.
Yeah.
And he's like already like punched Indy in the face like twice.
Yeah.
You know, like, so. Not many people get away with that. So
yeah, I guess that's the thing. Is Indy needs somebody who's going to be able to like slap him around it when he gets out of line every once in a while, and that's who Remy is.
There you go. So yeah, that's the end of season one. Congo in January 1917. The Albert Schweitzer episode, a really good episode. Really, you know, starts to change the Indy character, changes perspective, and it was good. I had fun with it. Not as action-packed as some of the other episodes, but it didn't need to be. It just needed to be interesting.
Yeah, well, because the previous one was so action-packed as is that I think it almost works out well that you kind of have this finish off to it.
Really, the previous three, from when he goes to war, like the episode, I think it was episode three, that was kind of like the movie 1917, mm-hmm. and he's got to deliver the package or whatever, and the airplane comes at him. Then they have that big war battle in the Congo. Oh, that's how that is in, you know, episode five. It starts off with that big war battle, and then they go deliver the guns, and there's some action in that too. So this one kind of calms things down a little bit, but it is a weird kind of episode to end the season on, I guess. But you know,
yeah, exactly. Because it's just like Albert Schweitzer just gets like taken, the French just take him away. It's like, okay, Indy, you learned your lesson. See ya. I'm going off on the boat. It has like as well as like if you didn't know what was going on, you're like, it almost feels like, does he make it out of that? Like, do the French actually, what do they do with him? You know what I mean?
Yeah. If you don't know the history of it, it is a very abrupt
ending. Yeah. It feels very bleak if you didn't know. It's just like, him and his wife go off on this boat in the middle of the night, like in the French, just like.
They do have some trouble ending these things. It's like the Lawrence of Arabia riding off the bike in that one episode where he just disappears. And they're like, and then all of a sudden you're back at the museum. I'm like, isn't the story still happening? Like,
yeah. Well, Lawrence of Arabia on the bike all the time.
So the next episode is the first episode in season two. It is in Austria, March 1917. Season two, episode one. Got some really cool people in this one. It's directed by Vic Armstrong and Carl Schultz. Just the bookend is Carl Schultz. And then this one is also written by Frank Darabont and, of course, George Lucas. When did this one come out? Because I'm kind of interested to see. So this was September 21st, 1992.
So not too much later.
Yeah. So just took the summer off. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the other one was April and then May, June, July, August, and then late September you're getting this one. So like you said, not too much of a time. Probably just had to take a break because of filming and stuff. This was a very extensive, kind of thing.
Well, and the thing too is that they're shooting all these kind of like at the same time. Like that's the thing. Is this whole series was just treated like one long movie. Mm-hmm. And you know, they would just shoot it. George would literally piece them together as they were shooting it. And then if he won some extra scenes or something like that, he would just have them go out and shoot it the next, couple days. And then he would start re-editing and so on. It has kind of an interesting way of like how the whole process of them putting it all together and so on. And George just literally sitting at command deck, like, he's, Star Trek.
We saw too, and something I like to get my hands on before we finish the series, because we're not even halfway through yet. So we still got plenty of time. We saw that there was a really cool book that was written about it.
yeah,
a behind the scenes book. But the thing is, it was printed once, and it was like, I think the cheapest that we saw was like $90
used for like a 100-page, like, you know, manual in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't remember the gentleman's name off the top of my head who wrote it, but he also had a lot to do with Star Wars and stuff. But he was a behind the scenes person on the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles and has a book that's, you know, there. And I'd love to get my hands on that. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. Yeah. But
that's one of those ones. Got to sort of look to see if somebody's upload a PDF of that, because a lot of times some of those books that are hard to get, people they'll archive it somehow.
I wonder if I like yell at him on Twitter, because I saw him respond to something at the author. What if I yell at him on Twitter, tell him we're doing a retrospective, see if he can hook me up with a, or just go on the show.
Yeah. Why not? You never know.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, we're not an interview show, but, you know, we'll see what happens. But anyway, Austria, March 1917. This episode has Christopher Lee in it.
I know.
Old Count Dooku in there.
Dracula.
There's a lot of parallels between this one and the Star Wars prequels. Because has another guy who's in episode one. He's also in Game of Thrones and a bunch of other things. Roger Ashton Griffiths. And this one reminded me of episode one, because this is probably, other than the kid part of episode one, my least favorite episode. It's not bad. And there's definitely some suspenseful moments that kind of make up for it. But this movie, I mean, this episode, there's chunks of it where Indy kind of disappears, and then really when he reappears, it's kind of like you could kind of take him out of the story, honestly, and it doesn't really mean anything. So, I mean, did you like this one?
This one was probably, I would say this one's kind of one of those, it sounds weird. This episode almost could be summed up a lot faster than probably what's going on. I mean, I know it's got like a big thing going on, because it's that, the Sixtus Affair or whatever, where Austria was like, you know what, we'll make a secret pact with you guys, and that will just get us out of the war and so on like that. And, you know, lo and behold, that doesn't go all the way through. But the whole point is that Indy's involved in trying to get this, you know, whatever, the Duke or whatever of Austria, or the, you know, the monarchist, you know, who ends his 1,000-year run, which, let's be honest, at the end of the day, you don't want a monarch. If a monarch has been going for 1,000 years, that's definitely more than enough time to end it.
Yeah.
So they go in there to try to get this secret treaty kind of going. And it's really like, that's kind of almost the simplicity of it. It's like, they just need to get this secret treaty. There's a little bit of like, you know, covert op, you know, back and forth crossing borders and so on like that, you know. You literally got old Christopher Lee, Count Dooku, Scaramanga over there, who he's actually in it, but it's like, he's really like, I felt like, boy, they didn't really give Christopher Lee a whole lot to do. He just comes in as like the angry attorney guy and just stares at him, and then seems like he has like all of three scenes, and then he's kind of out of there. It's just like, oh, okay.
Yeah. It's this episode, there's a lot of politics. That's why it reminded me of episode one, because it's just a lot of talking.
Yep.
And which I don't mind that kind of stuff. I love history, so I love seeing this stuff. But it really didn't need Indy there. And really, when you have Indy there, it just kind of feels like odd, because he wasn't. And then also, but also it's just like, you, there's really not a lot for his character to do in the middle of the episode. But is trying to deliver a package and has dropped it in the wrong mailbox, I think.
Yeah, that's how it starts off. He's at the post lady comes on, and she's like, old man, what are you doing? Trying to, you know, he's got his arm like halfway down there, like trying to pull stuff out, looking like he's just some kind of old criminal or just senile guy. And this poor lady, I just feel like she's got to get back to work. We all know that, you know, those packages don't deliver themselves. And he goes on being like, well, let me tell you how I almost saved Austria.
He's like, I haven't had a hard time delivering a package since World War One, and I had to do it. And this lady's like, oh shit, here we go. I'm stuck. Like, cause she's like, she's a mail lady, and she's trying to, you know, do her job, and this old man's just gonna stop her for 45 minutes to, you know, recount his time in World War One. But yeah, essentially, it transitions from that, and Indiana Jones, he is a spy now. He's working for the French, basically the French Secret Service, essentially, is where he's at now. So he's disenchanted with the war. He's done with it. He wants to do anything that can get this war over with. That's what he's interested in. That's what he's interested in helping with, because the trench warfare, the needless loss of life, the pettiness, the just pointlessness of this war has really kind of gotten to him. And now he's ready to try to facilitate the end of it. And in this episode, he gets a chance because he is tasked with being somewhat of a courier of kind of like a, like you said, a peace treaty, a peace agreement, you know, to between Austria and I think Germany, right?
No, it's Austria wants to get out from Germany, of like from, you know, beneath them in a sense, so that like they, because they're allied with Germany, you know, and all those mysterious like allies that nobody realized everybody had until like the war started. So they're going over to France, and I guess you would almost say like the allies of this time period sort of side, and going, hey, we're going to cut off, you know, so Germany will be just left by themselves. Like that's sort of like what it's all kind of going for. And Indiana Jones is literally there, is really like the chaperone for these kind of two, like, Prince and Pauper type kind of guys who literally, like, that's like literally what Indy's there. It's like Indy's just, he's getting kind of hard, and he's like, oh, I gotta take care of the, like, you know, the richy rich guys or whatever. It's like, dude, Indy, you're richy rich too, let's be honest. I mean, I know it's like a dick measuring contest to see who's richer than the next guy, but let's, at the end of the day, Indy, you're not poor.
Well, it's a class thing. It's because Indy is, you know, who's somebody who at this point in his life, he's, you know, teamed up with a bunch of rebels. You know, well, first of all, when he's a kid, he travels around the whole world. He's super cultured. He's been taught all these languages, taught all this history, you know, went, you know, rock climbing on a pyramid with a 75-year-old teacher, met Lawrence of Arabia, you
hung
know,
out Pancho Villa.
Hung out Pancho Villa and his rebels. So he's very well traveled, very well cultured. They show that a lot in the Elizabeth Hurley episode where they're like trading back and forth of, you know, languages and discussing things and, you know, and trying to one up each other with, you know, their knowledge. So he's somebody who, he's fortunate to have been given the education he is, but he also like is involved with the world and, you know, will get dirty, will, you know, and these guys are these like playboy kind of wannabes. They're like going to parties and are talking about the socialite aspect of what they do, and he has no time for that shit. He's above it.
You know, so it's like, he's just really tasked with making sure these boys get from, you know, point A to point B, back to point A again, you know. And that's kind of his thing. You know what's the other really interesting thing I was thinking about this whole time is Indiana Jones is literally not called by his regular name the entire time he's in war. He's still got that weird goofy name that he made up off the wall, like in Belgium. I can't really remember what it is, but he'll mention it every once in a while in these episodes. He'll say what his name is because he just reads the sign behind the guy, and that's what his name is. And it's like played off as a joke, but it's like, I love how that literally is just stuck with it. That's like has been his name in these last like three or four episodes. It'll probably be for the next 10 more episodes that he's in World War One. You know what I mean? Like, he'll be stuck with that name. I'm surprised that, like, how is he even getting, he, like, he'll be so used to this, like, new name that he created that you'd be surprised he even uses Indiana.
Well, I'll say something cool about this episode I noticed is that I didn't really notice it until they were getting a little bit further, but there's only been, like, subtle callbacks or, like, flash actually foreshadowing into what Indy becomes, because Indy's a very trademarked character. He's got his hat, he's got his whip, he's got his leather jacket, he's got his look, he's scared of snakes, you know, all these things. And this character, one, he doesn't look too much like Harrison Ford, but he doesn't have a lot of that same aesthetic, but he's slowly building into Indiana Jones. And this one, you see it more than any of them, because with the hat, the jacket. Now he changes clothes a lot in this one, but you're starting to see that future Indiana Jones start to kind of play into this character, which I really like how they've done that subtly. They're not just like, well, here's Indiana Jones when he's teen. He's just, you know, in a teenager, he's the same damn person, but the same leather jacket, same everything, but now he's young. No.
Yeah.
He's evolving into that Indy, which is really cool.
Yeah, because he starts to get grumpy Indy on this one here too. Like he's sitting there on the chair, like the train, arms crossed, like yelling at the two boys and whatnot.
Well, the funny thing is they both have similar aspirations. They both, he and the young guys, it was Prince Sixtus. He's like, you know, he's the son of the Emperor of Austria, right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And then like the sister is the one who's married to, like, that's how they all tie together, is their sister is the one married to the Austrian, whatever, Duke or Prince or whatever. Mm.
So, yeah, so they're like, you know, well up in the royal family, well to do, you know, kind of whatever, but they're tired of the trench warfare. They're tired of all the things that are going on over there, and they want the war to end just like Indy does, but they don't see eye to eye because they're very different in terms of who they are as people and what they're interested in as people. But they have the same goal, and these guys have the ability to help put a stop to the war, but they need Indy to get them from point A to point B, because they're definitely not as, you know, well versed in, you know, espionage.
Yeah,
as Indy is.
You know, it's one of those ones. It's like, yeah, that's kind of the thing. And that's how this episode sort of goes. It plays out with a lot of kind of talky, you know, politics scenes. You know, it's got some of the ones, it's got a lot of ones where they're on a train and people come by looking for their papers and so on. And they got to do the old switcheroo a handful of moments. So, you know, that kind of goes on there. And it's an interesting episode. It's just probably, I think, coming from the last two episodes, it's, you kind of need that, like, sort of like a dip down lull episode. And I think that's kind of what this one is. It's not bad, even though it should be the first of the next season. But as I said, once you come off those two African episodes, I think it's just tough to, especially when you're watching them kind of back to back, you know, I think that's just kind of how it is.
Yeah. And also this is we mentioned, like, you're starting to see the character become young, you know, regular Indiana Jones that we know and love, the Harrison Ford Indiana Jones. But also the action scene in there, there's this one in particular where they're running from this Prussian that's after them to keep them from doing what they want to do. And they're running through the streets of this European town. I can't remember where they were, but they're running through the streets, and it's kind of got this noir element. They're running through the shadows and all that stuff. Yeah, some of the action, as it gets to some of the more actiony stuff, when they're like jumping across rooftops, and the way the action is choreographed and plays out, started to seem more like the Indiana Jones movies too. It throws the guys off the balcony and like, oh, he's gone. No, he grabbed onto the ledge, you know? So it was very,
you know. I love it too, when he throws a guy off the ledge, and then the guys at the bottom, all they do is they just look up, they go, huh, somebody fell. Well, let's just start shooting straight up. Like, you know, like that's the safest choice.
Mm-hmm. And clearly Prussians are stormtroopers, because damn, they couldn't hit anything with those guns. I mean, they were like point blank range at a few points. Had those guys dead to rights, and they couldn't get them, and they fall through a roof, and they finally get away, and they have to, now they're trying to get away on train. I will say there's a lot of suspense in this one. It's a very suspenseful episode. When it finds its bearings, that's not too goofy. It's really suspenseful.
No, yeah, it's definitely suspenseful. It's got a bunch of those cool, like, you know, almost like 007, like train scenes, you know, where you're on there and you're just kind of wondering what's going to kind of happen next. And as, like, you know, the police of each stop come by, you know, like, how are they going to deal with this situation? There definitely is a lot here. And as I said, I still really enjoyed this one. But as I said, just those last two episodes were just so strong.
Yeah. Christopher Lee, as you mentioned, doesn't get a whole lot to do. He's Count Ottokar Graf Serzin, or whatever, Serin, whatever. It doesn't matter. He's like a political advisor to the Emperor of Austria. And he's telling him what to write and what to say to make this thing go through. And they don't really want to listen to him, especially, you know, their sons, Benedict Taylor, the Prince Sixtus, you know, the young guys that Indy's been helping, they don't really want to listen.
Yeah.
To this count that is Christopher Lee, but it is cool to see Christopher Lee in there. Also, Joss Ackland. I was like, what do I know him? Where do I know him from? Where do I know him from? Where do I know him from? And it hit me when they're waiting for the train. Diplomatic immunity from Lethal Weapon 2. It's the villain from there.
That's right. I didn't think about that, but now the second you said that, it's all registering.
Yeah, it took me. His picture on IMDb is very different too, so it didn't hit me at first either. When I was watching, I'm like, I've seen this son of a bitch in something. I know I have. I feel like I've seen him in multiple things. He's kind of this really imposing older guy. And then I clicked on his picture, and if I saw Lethal Weapon 2 pop up, and as soon as I saw it, I'm like, oh shit, it's Diplomatic Immunity.
Exactly.
Damn. Yep. So yeah, he's in there. Christopher Lee's in there. A few other like lightly familiar faces. The Bavarian. Okay, so I don't know if you saw this on IMDb, but one of the people in here, there's a person who plays the Bavarian. I was looking for him in the episode, and I don't remember seeing it. But it's Terry Richards, and his picture is he's the guy in Raiders of the Lost Ark when he worked for months and months on that, like, and trained for that sword scene to fight Indy.
Oh, yeah.
And Indy just shoots him. Ad-libs it. Well, he's in this episode somewhere.
Ooh. Huh, somewhere in there.
Yeah, he's the Bavarian. I'm trying to remember who he was. But, yeah, anyway.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, miscellaneous characters that could have been.
Yeah. I've been waiting to see a little bit more of those older actors that from Star Wars and stuff like that. But, you know, it's you see a lot of people that are going to be in the prequels coming up. So clearly George was in the midst of scouting for future roles and stuff like that.
Well, this young Indiana Jones was the ultimate like testing grounds that George used to kind of like, you know, in a sense, make for all like the technology for the prequels and so on like that. Mm-hmm. Like so much of the stuff carried on over. The team that worked on the young Indiana Jones is mostly the exact same team that worked on the prequels. Mm-hmm. Like he kind of put together his like 90s crew right from here.
Well, Rick McCallum, even the producer, he's heavily involved with the prequels. And so, yeah, this is, you start to see a lot of things come to fruition in these. I mean, this was a big, big, big production. Like we can't stress that enough. Like it, for to be on ABC television in the 90s, the fact that they had such a big budget, they were filming on location, like they were, this is like a big, big thing. And it would fit right in today with any type of streaming stuff. The budget, I mean, that Lord of the Rings show had like a $1 billion budget.
Yeah.
Like you do this today, it makes more sense. But TV in the 90s, I mean, you know, there's not a whole lot like this.
Well, because also, you know what I think about TV in the 90s back in the day, it's just like, it kind of only had like, it's, you know, one life. And then if you're lucky, it got syndicated, but you didn't have really video yet. I mean, you know, some TV would come out on VHS, but that was still pretty rare. And it was so expensive that like, it just wasn't very common for most people to even have. So it's like, you know what I mean? Where like, you know, like once you hit like the 2000s, you know, you got the whole DVD market that you could have, that saved a lot of TV shows, was that the fact that they could sell the DVD sets of them and so on like that, mm-hmm. you know? And then, you know, nowadays you kind of do, you have, you know, do your different streaming and so on that you can kind of sell to. But yeah, it's weird how it kind of goes of, you know, how big of a budget this sort of has. And I mean, in my opinion, this thing looked like it looks, I mean, it doesn't look maybe movie quality good, but it's still pretty high up there.
It's better than like, if you're young enough to remember this, like in the 90s, it was a lot of made for TV movies. 80s too, 80s and 90s. And think of the like the TV version of It. Like it was good for television, but it pales in comparison to what if that movie had been made into a movie, even in the late 80s and 90s, much less the future version of It, which I hate those movies, but this is beside the point. It's the TV version of it was pretty damn good, but that was like the best quality of TV version of like the It stuff. This blows that out of the water. Young Indiana Jones blows that, you know. So that's the thing. It's like it's in, you know, reading more and learning more about it, the big budget and lower viewership, those two things combined, really, really kind of killed the series. Because I think, do you think the main reason was it's just not Harrison Ford?
You know, it might have been, because it's just that kind of time period that might have thrown people. Because it's like, where was you're coming right off of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, so you think that Indy would be as hot as all can be. I don't know if there was a little bit of a George fatigue at this period as well, too, as I think there's just certain people that got kind of tired of Star Wars. You know, maybe they put up with Indiana Jones for that last run, but they were just getting kind of burnt on all that. I don't know, like. You know what I mean? Because that's still that time period where people get kind of weird. Like, if movies go longer than three, they're like, oh, this is just too many now. It's, you know, where nowadays nobody cares anymore. But there's definitely was a stigma to having too many sequels and so on. And it doesn't sound like much right now, like a trilogy. But, like, really, a trilogy was still a very uncommon thing, you know, back, you know, in the 80s. You still didn't see that often. Like, Star Wars and Indiana Jones are kind of like, that's why they're sort of the definitive trilogies, is because those ones sort of set the bar, and they kind of were the, like, you know, close to the original big blockbuster trilogies of movies. Then, like, all three of them are all fantastically good. So I don't know if there was a little bit of a fatigue. It just happened. Like, it's just like that right afterwards, you know, time frame.
Yeah. I don't know what really caused it with this show. I mean, it's remembered again by people who love Indiana Jones, people who are like retro nostalgia nerds. They remember this show, but it's the broader sense. The show is just completely forgotten, and it's a shame, because it's not only is it high quality, but it's also really good. And I mean, I'm really enjoying this even more than I thought I was going to so far.
Yeah, that's sort of how I feel too, because I actually because sometimes there's, like, you know, there's some of those shows you go back and it's like they're fun for like an episode or two, but then you kind of realize, you're like, yeah, okay, I feel like I sort of saw all that sort of was. Where this one's like, no, each one, I'm like, I'm looking forward to whatever comes next, and it's good. I think also it's the combination of, like, not only is it Indiana Jones, but the fact that you get all the World War One stuff in there, it gives a lot of, like, what you kind of want to see in, you know, stories. And yeah, the whole way through, it's just a cool thing. You know, as I said, like, I'm still trying to think, because I even think there's even all the tie-ins. There's the comic books that go in with this. There's the video games that go in with this. I mean, this is even right around the same time period where, even Indiana Jones fatigue, it's like, well, that's when you have some of the biggest regular Indiana Jones video games, like Fate of Atlantis comes out right around this time period as well, you know, and that's a huge, like, you know, point-and-click adventure game. So there's still, like, this Indiana Jones-ness, but maybe it's just one of those ones, like, at this time period, it's the core Indiana Jones fan is a niche audience still. And maybe that's just not big enough for TV.
Maybe. I don't know. It's really weird that it just didn't pan out, because it is really, really good. And I still feel like ABC probably didn't put the attention into it that they needed, but maybe too much of the budget was eaten up by production. So, but yeah, episodes 6 and 7, we're chugging right along. We're making progress. We're into season 2 now. 7 was a fun episode. There was definitely a lot of politics that felt like it could have been, you know, congested into one scene as opposed to, like, you know, pulling it out.
Yeah.
But overall, it was, I think, probably the weakest episode we've seen, but it was still damn good, which makes me have high hopes for everything.
The weakest of teenage Indy, definitely probably more exciting than kid Indy.
Yeah, but not that much though.
Yeah.
Kid Indy had some, like, cool moments. I mean, you had the Lawrence of Arabia thing and the wacky teacher, which I guess she's going to be gone for a while. But again, Young and Restored on YouTube. Go there. Watch these things with us. We're going to be doing, I'm assuming, 8 and 9 next.
Yeah, even though I almost want to say 8 might be one of those full-length or, like, movie-length episodes. So
I don't think it's a movie length, but I do think,
I thought it was because I could have swore when I saw it pop up next, it was like, it said tonight, like, 1 hour and 23 minutes or something like that.
Let me check here.
Movie length as in it's 2 episodes.
So next we'll be going to, the next two are World War II episodes. We're looking at 8 and 9, and it's Young Indiana Jones, episode 8, Psalm, early August. And then, Young Indiana Jones Chronicle episode 9, Germany, mid-August. And I think the next episode we might have to do 3, I think is what maybe you're looking at, because you got Europe, and then all 1917, and then it goes to 1920 in Chicago. So we might have to do 3 episodes on the next one. So stay tuned for that. We'll see how we do it. But they're all 45 minute longs. I think I remember seeing it was 15 episodes, 45 minutes long before you get to a movie.
Okay.
Episode 19.
Yeah.
So yeah, episode 19 has its feature length, and that one goes, looks like it might go back in time. Then you have one that goes all the way back to 1916 in Ireland. So it does kind of do that Clone Wars thing, as I was mentioning, where it kind of bounces around.
Yeah.
Chronologically. So, you know, we'll just stick with it. We'll just go the episode that, you know, they're in. That's how they're intended to be seen in the first place. So might as well stick with that.
Yeah. Sounds like a plan to me.
There you go. Well, anyway, thanks for listening to the Young Indiana Jones Retrospective. We're having fun with this. The goal is to get these all done going into Indiana June. And we'll have finished the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. We're going to review all the films, and then we'll go into Indiana Jones 5 and the Dial of Destiny, and we'll do a fast forward on that and tell you what we think about one of the most classic VHS era franchises, and we'll have everything wrapped up, at least in terms of the TV and movies and all that stuff. So any last points you want to add, anything that you want to kind of throw out there?
Yeah. You know what? I think we got these ones kind of covered. Well, I'm looking forward to whatever comes next in the Young Indiana Jones series. It's one of those ones. It's just a really good old time.
Yeah, I agree. I'm having fun with it. I'm glad we did this. I'm going to be disappointed when it's over.
Yeah.
So, but we still have, we do have to get going a little bit, to kind of get it done by June.
We're almost a third through, I guess, but yeah, we're a fourth.
Third through, but we still have all of March, all of April, all of May. And then Indiana Jones 5 comes out the end of June. So we got a little bit of time, so we can make it work. But anyway, thanks for listening. Y'all have a good one. Stay tuned for more Rewind reviews on the podcast proper on via VHS. And then you can stay tuned for more Young Indiana Jones Retrospective as we finish the series. And who knows what comes after that? We've thought about some things, and we'll see where it goes for the second half of the year. But that's a long way in the future. But anyway, thanks for listening. Y'all have a good one. And via VHS is out.